5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening, one and all. It is the new Panic Room, episode 295, and last of the year. So I think easily obliged to roll out the Christmas tunes. That I have to say, I think probably the only one I can stomach. I, for one, do not wait for Christmas every day, but I know someone who does. Yeehaw in the US, you know. So yeah, it's funny. I've seen all the pictures of festiveness, and that we've done nothing, literally nothing. Except to be fair, the only Christmas in this. No, we're gonna do it this weekend because obviously the kids have been at their mothers this past week. I'm not that sad. I'm gonna do it by myself. So no, Saturday we're gonna go out and get the tree and decorate and everything. So. That's how it did for me. You know, you break up from school, and then that first weekend after breaking up from school, that's when you Christmas everything. Not fucking August like you do. But
you're gonna get them out this weekend, and Christmas is like next weekend. So I'm like,
I only have to put up with all that glittery bullshit for. Over
oh my
so,
gosh!
I hate it. This is horrible. I can't wait to get the tree out of my house and get all the crap down and just be done with it because it's just I'm gonna have a festive beer. Here we go. Listen, here we go. Hang on. There you go. That's the bottle. So, merry fucking Christmas.
No, I whined for I don't even know how
I'll
long.
Tell you something.
Until we
need,
got our
I
decorations.
Really need this. I'm not talking about Christmas now. Done with it. So over it. Don't care.
No,
I'm having my beer now. You're like a 4-year-old. It's really sweet that you still have that childlike wonder of Christmas. On the other side of the coin, it's annoying. You're an adult. Next thing, you're a grown-up. You have grown-up children. Stop it.
I know. I am worse than my children.
Like the rest of us old people.
I have to bully my children into putting up the tree with me because I'm so excited about it. And they're just like, oh, God, can we just get this over with? And, you know, I bought something just today, another decoration. And so I'm addicted to decorating, and I'm so excited.
Yes,
and I'm playing the Christmas music. I'm watching the Christmas movies, and I just, I know, I am just as jolly as they can be. And I think next week we're getting a cold front, and I'm crossing my fingers for snow. So, you know, I want to just, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. It'll probably be in the 80s here on Christmas.
Oh,
I remember one year, not long after we moved, just because I could. We had a barbecue Christmas dinner. I was outside, shorts and t-shirt, barbecuing on the grill, which was awesome. We're not cooking Indian food this year.
Oh gosh, the first year we had moved to Florida, we walked on the beach Christmas Day just because we could, you know, just. So, but no, I think it was last year when it actually snowed on Christmas, and it was just beautiful, and I'm hoping for a repeat, and I have all the traditional Christmas meal plans. We bought the ham last month, I think, to make sure that, have it.
I know,
just, yes.
Yeah.
No, so I can't wait.
I am actually going to go to the British shop down the road and buy mince pies, proper British pies. I miss those. But they should have them in by now. Uh-huh. So again, Saturday I'm going to run down and probably get some mince pies. Well, then traditional, our big sort of Christmas turkey dinner is Christmas in England, but because we do the Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Eating that fucking thing, to be honest with you. I get the smallest I can. And this thing could feed most, you know, some small African country for like a fortnight. And we get to the point that even the dog, you know, I'm giving it just some turkey. We'll have kibble. You know, I'm not eating that. No, just get rid of it. Get out of my face now. I could be miserable about Christmas for a whole hour, but I'm not going to, because I'm going to be trendy. And thank you for Christmas card, actually, and the beautiful heartfelt message that you wrote in. It did bring a tear to my eye. It's like from an ex-ignorant Christian. Thank you. You must have spent hours on that. What are we going on the show this evening?
I am excited. Another guest has agreed to come back, and I just, you know, they should know better. But I love to talk to people we've already talked. Yeah, I know. So, I'm just going to introduce her, and we're going to, you know, push the button, and yay, I'm so excited. On the show tonight,
I don't know what I did. Screen all went something different. But that's what you get for watching porn while trying to do the show. Really, Jimbo's doing that. So, you're saying next, Tina.
Alrighty. On our show tonight, we have award-winning, best-selling author and world-renowned, free-flowing psychic medium, Catherine Branham. Woo! I'm so excited to be here. I'm just about to grab my keys and drive over to the station right now and bring a little of that Christmas cheer to James, who seems a little, humdrum over the holidays.
That's true. Yeah, do you know, that would be great. You could actually do, I never thought of that. That would have been brilliant. You and Ray could have come down to the show here. That would have been exciting.
That would have been
pretty
cool.
We should do that. The next book that's out, I'll have you down here. You can come and meet all my dogs. Bless them. But no, I'm just old and miserable, you know, Christmas used to be, I mean, as a kid, it's about, as a kid, then when you have children, it's about them. yeah, the kids are growing up, and you know, a lot of them are. I think once the Santa thing goes, then it's not mad.
No.
You know, my daughter now just sends me the Amazon links to what she wants. You know, so she does. I just put them in my cart and buy them, and that's that. But I've still got a couple of surprises up my sleeve, which I think you need. So I try to keep it going, you know. I'm doing my best.
You're pulling it together, and you're doing awesome. Every time I see you, it's such a delight. Every time I get a chance to spend time with you, I wish I lived closer to Xena, because I know her and I would be putting our trees up at the same time. Who cares what the rest of the house does, right?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. You know, and for me, James is like, oh, we'll put it up this weekend. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, that just gives me anxiety, because, the longer you have it up, the more joy and the more winter and the fun. And I don't know. I'm just so excited.
The more... pine needles you have to clear up. That's what it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would have put my tree up, I think, you know, Thanksgiving evening if anybody else had helped me, you know, if I had had any help. But they made me wait like a whole week, and that was torture. It was awful.
Oh, the monsters.
I know. And then it was not until last weekend that we got the outside decorations up, and I was like, you robbed me of like two whole weeks. And yeah, it's just but now everything is complete, and I'm happy and serene and Christmassy, and I have a hat. I have a Christmas hat. I can't wait to jingle bell all over the place with my hat, and I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm more excited than my kids are, which is just sad. It's sad. But
she's even made me make the Haban Books website festive. 3 years she bullies me into making it festive, and I have to grit my teeth to do it, because, you know, just keep me happy.
It's so cute. It is. And I went to it the other day, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, he doesn't have the hat on yet. So I did. I had to bully you. And
yeah,
you did it.
Yes, I thought I got away with it, actually. But anyhow, Catherine's, again, on a happier note, Catherine's here to talk about a book about murder. So, and I've had the privilege of having a preview of the book, and it is... mind-chilling, I have to say. So, Catherine, tell us all about it.
Well, I'm so excited that murder makes you happy with the holidays. I feel like I'm
well,
on this one.
It cheers me up. It's been a festive cheer.
I've got a real gift for you. I've got a special story that I'll be telling you then when our next get-together that I haven't published yet on murder. So... Yeah, and you know, the book that I have out is, it was murder, and it's nobody knew it was murder, and it's based on true stories from readings that I've done over the years, and this is actually going in quite a few people's stocking this year, so I don't know if that goes against the holiday jolly time or whatever, but I'll drop a can of paint and some chocolate in there with it.
I would love to find it in my stocking. I would. And again, I'm gonna just shamelessly say, it's Xtina when you make out that signed copy. And,
yes.
I just. I checked out the book on Amazon. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I have to have this. I have to read this. So, yes, Catherine, tell us about it.
Well, the book is based on several short stories of readings that I've done or spirits that I've met. And the death certificate read one way that they died, and really they died, it was murder. So... there's a couple of them that were poisoned, and one was marked as suicide that actually was murder. And a couple of them that were murdered, that they had no suspects, we were able to gain who it was that killed them and help the loved ones that actually came in for the reading or the session. And there was lots that I've learned along the way from deceased people that actually came in to teach me more about the spirit world, what deceased people know, even those that were violently murdered, and what transpired after they passed through the light. So it's always interesting to me, and I find myself asking, you know, a gazillion questions while they're there.
I can imagine. Now, for the spirits who that you find out that it, you know, they died a different way than it said, do you think that they find peace or rest after it's you know, it comes out that it, you know, they it was murder?
I do, because what we don't know as human collective consciousness here on Earth is that whatever pain that we cause to others, whoever inflicts that pain, you know, our higher self, which is part of us, decides, so we can learn what it is, we will put ourselves through that same experience after we pass. And so when I've had the opportunity to read for people who were murdered, even those that were violently murdered and did not even know their assailants, they're very emotionless as they're telling me how they were murdered and what happened. They're very matter of fact. And so a couple of the places that I've gone into clear, you know, sometimes you'll just get someone that maybe had, you know, had a heart attack or overdosed or whatever, and they didn't know they had died. But then you get cases where you go in to clear the property and there's a spirit there that was actually murdered. And once they come forward and bring the information of what happened, we're able to call in the spirit guides and angels and open that portal so that they can cross into light. And, yeah, so when you say rest in peace, no one really rests in peace on the other side. You know, they go on to living in the light, and there's lifetimes between this one, of course, that we're currently living. So, but it is interesting to understand the spiritual lessons behind it. And what actually happens after the ordeal or the murder?
Are they looking for justice? What do they want to say? It sounds like they're not angry. They want justice themselves, or they want the perpetrator to have retribution? How does that work?
You know, in real life, when spirits come forward, they're never angry. They're usually there to comfort the loved one that is usually the ones that are left here tormented. You know, it's the living that torment themselves, you know, like maybe it shoulda, woulda, coulda, if I would have done this, it wouldn't have happened, a kind of thing. So usually they're coming forward with a message to help bring in peace. But a lot of times, you know, we may witness one thing that happens, but there's 10 other things happening behind the scenes of that one thing. So sometimes it is so it can help their assailant make better choices where, you know, maybe they're given the same situation from another lifetime, and instead of making the same choice to choke this person, to kill them, they were supposed to just look at it and walk away or look at the situation and elevate their emotions to not do the same crime again, because they're basically stuck in a karmic loop. And I've read for several people that were stuck in a karmic loop, like they died the same way in the last several lifetimes. And so in a few of the other stories that I have coming out, I warned a woman about, and this one is in one of the workbook series that I have out, I warned her about being, this guy was going to choke her because the last lifetime he had choked her to death. And so given the chance, he went to choke her, and he thought he killed her, and he ran out of the house. And her mom went into the room and, you know, checked her, and she was unconscious. He choked her to the point she was unconscious, but he didn't know. He thought he killed her at that point. And so that's when she took my warning seriously, and we went through and did a series of releases so she's not going to die the same way. She broke the karmic loop. But there's several people I've noticed they've died the exact same way. And it didn't matter what timeline or time period it was. It was like, okay, they got shot in the back. They're going to get shot in the back again until they break it.
I definitely think as humans that it's very easy to just keep making the same mistakes. I mean, I see it in my own life, and even things that you just, you know, you can see it a mile away, yet you still walk, you know, right through that same path again. And even though you're going, why did I do that? That's stupid. You know better. You know, you still find yourself doing it. So, got to give credit to anyone who can stop that cycle there, even if they're the living or the dead.
Exactly. But when the dead come forward, it usually helps elevate the living to help them, like, see beyond their 3D viewpoint of life at that point, you know, before the deceased come forward. So I've really witnessed some amazing awakenings happen. And certain people that have come in for reading or that I've met and said, hey, you know, this is what happened. I'd like to talk to you for a minute. And I see them elevate their frequency. It shifts almost immediately.
Wow. I definitely want to hear more. Do we have I think we have an excerpt that you're going to read for us, Catherine?
Yes, I have a little something here that I'll read for you from It Was Murder. As Teddy would tell the story to his wife, police came by the diner a few weeks later and asked about the vacuum salesman. It seemed he hadn't been seen in a week, and he hadn't checked in with the company he worked for. He'd become quite visible over the last month, and suddenly no one could find him. Teddy went to pick up the meat from Big Mike and noticed Carmilla working the counter. She looked horrible, like she hadn't been sleeping well. While he was there, the police came in and asked her about Frank, or Mr. Vacuum, as most called him. She said she hadn't seen him in a week, and she suspected he had taken off with someone else. They seemed to believe her, since Mr. Vacuum didn't have a permanent address. He worked in many areas of the city. After they left, Teddy suspected Big Mike's behavior. He knew what happened to Mr. Vacuum. No one in the friend group from Friday night ever brought him up again. They knew Big Mike had tools to get rid of him. It wasn't until Mario went in to pick up his weekly order, which looked and tasted abnormal, that he realized Mr. Vacuum had been processed as ground meat. The friend group, all of them who owned restaurants, were urged not to buy the hamburger beef that week, even after my grandfather Teddy sold the diner and moved to Texas. He still refused to eat anything he couldn't identify and wouldn't let anyone else do it either. My grandfather passed away before I was born, but I've had many visits with him on several occasions while he was in spirit form. The story about the suspicious meat really bothered me, since it was the first time I'd heard about my grandfather's rule. One night, while I was shuffling through photos of the diners and the friends that my grandparents had during the time, I decided to call in Grandfather Teddy and ask what happened during that time that he owned the New York Diner Cafe. As he entered the space, my spirit guides were already there. The portal he had come through seemed different in a way. A few other souls came into the space, greeted him with a frequency of love. As we exchanged emotions, he told me that he thought Big Mike, that he brought with him Big Mike and Carmilla. The energy identified as Big Mike moved forward. I'm the one you have questions for. What do you want to know? His voice sent shivers up my back, and I could clearly see Big Mike had made his way to the light of God, and he wasn't a ghost. He was standing right in front of me, and the little peach fuzz on my arm stood up too. I didn't know what to ask, so I started with the obvious. Did you kill Mr. Vacuum? His frequency answered very loudly, yes, I did. I didn't intend for anything to him. I just couldn't control my emotions. The frequency of God came in. He'd known Carmilla had been cheating. I'd needed more answers from the spirits. And of course, I shared with Big Mike, can you tell me how you ran into Mr. Vacuum the night that you killed him? Big Mike displayed no physical emotions as he heard me. I was bothered by what Camilla had been doing since I was working hard to provide for her a great life, and she chose to disgrace me all over town. I loved Carmilla, and I gave her chance after chance to stop cheating on me. Carmilla was helping me at the shop and working the front counter when I noticed she wasn't up there one day. I walked to the back, and Mr. Vacuum was there. They were all over each other, the same way Carmilla was with me, and somehow I couldn't stop my rage. I pushed her away from him and slammed him against the brick wall of the building. Mr. Vacuum was scared. I could see in his eyes. I stood 10 inches above him, and he was afraid. Carmilla was screaming at me to let him go, but I continued to pound him against the wall until I realized what I had done. I watched intently as Big Mike showed no emotion, which was normal when a soul entered the light after death and processed their experience. I'd noticed many times that when souls had that opportunity to process, they delivered the information as if it was just history class. At that point, it seemed to become one of many lives that soul had lived. I wanted more of the story before asking Big Mike what happened next. I looked down the alley and saw no one. I carried Mr. Vacuum in and processed him like I would a cow, continued. Carmilla was in shock, so I told her to help the customers at the counter, and I'll be in the back. Carmilla spoke up then. I learned my selfish ways were wrong and lived every day of my life with guilt of what happened. When I finally died in a nursing home in New York, I still carried the sadness of having a man lose his life because of me. I went into the light of God and realized I could have done better if I had considered the feelings of all those involved. I chose to experience the hurt and pain of heartbreak I put Big Mike through, and I fooled around with other men. I turned my attention to Grandfather Teddy. Did you move because of this? I asked. Yes and no, he said. It was time for us to move. Many of my cousins had moved to Texas, and I took the opportunity to leave. Indeed, I never wanted to eat meat that I couldn't identify. The only person I ever told was your granny, my wife, during that lifetime. That was an excerpt from the chapter called The Butcher.
Wow. That was some intense things there. I definitely am going to need a copy of that book. So XCINA. Okay. I think
I can bring you. I can drive down the road and get one. So you can just fuck off. Seriously.
That's right. Well, no.
Catherine, make it pay for it. Seriously. She's always on the couch. Always.
She's so mean. It's for Christmas, James. Get in the spirit.
Humbug. That's what I say.
I think we're going to take a quick break real quick and then spend a couple of minutes talking to our reviewers. So don't go anywhere, Catherine, and we'll be back.
Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Come on!
part two.
Well, there we are. Again, you know, beneath the pressure, another Christmas tune there from B. Ray's girl. You know, she's done well for herself. She's done well for herself.
Yeah,
little Miley, though.
She has.
Well, make sure, you know, sort of the Disney kids show star next week. You know, she's on TV. So, you know, onwards and upwards. Onwards and upwards is what
she's,
I say. So, any crystal presser. She has got a fine pair of pipes. Yes, indeed, she has. But less of the smart, Christina. This is a family show. It's not. So we just as well. I have to say. But anyway, speaking of family shows, it's that time of the evening where we say,
"Oh, hey, looks like it's time to review something." Oh no.
Hey,
well,
everybody.
Hello, lovely summer. Hello, summer. Merry Christmas, etc. I'm running out of festive cheer very, very this evening, I'm afraid. So what have you got for this evening?
Okay, so I just finished Happy Hour at the Harlequin's Slaughterhouse, and it is by Kevin Sweeney. It is a novella. And this one's really gross. It's really gross, but it's like, it's gross in a unique way. So you have Reuben, and he is an alcoholic, and he bar hops. That's what he does. That's all that he does. He's just a drunk. And he recently got off on a technicality for drunk driving, and he killed this guy named Glenn's daughter, Wendy. And he hasn't learned anything from it. He's still doing, you know, the bar hopping scene. He's just being a bad person. So Glenn, Wendy's dad, decides that he is going to help Reuben get over his alcoholism because it's what his daughter would have wanted. So he kind of, like, kidnaps him and takes him home with him. And there he has his own little, like, bar and stuff set up, and he has his own happy hour. And he creates this aversion therapy where he makes the drinks, you know, the alcoholic drinks, really gross. So Reuben won't want to drink again. And I was like, okay, so how gross is this going to get? And right out the gate, the first drink that he makes this guy drink is vodka mixed with, like, the spit you spit out at the dentist office.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Okay, and so it's talking about, like, all of, like, the blood and the spit and pieces of teeth. I mean, that's just the first one, okay? There's a couple of other drinks,
wow.
But I'll let you imagine what those are. And I was like, this is so freaking disgusting. But it was an interesting story to me, really, because, you know, my husband has been sober from drinking for a year and a half now. And I was just like, I was just kind of maybe imagining if this was him. And my husband has, like, the weakest stomach ever. Like, he can't even change baby diapers, you know what I mean? And I was just like, oh, I should read him this passage. And he would probably vomit all over the place, so I did not read him the passage. But it was just a really cool idea to take, like, you know, alcoholism, aversion therapy, make it super, super gross. And I really wasn't expecting the ending. I can't say that I was, like, a super fan of the ending. I think I should have seen it coming, but I didn't. But it was an interesting read. Like, right out the gate, that's what you get met with, is this nasty dental spit. And now I think every time I go to the dentist and they're, like, spitting the tube, I'm going to be like, oh God. Like,
like, what do you do with this afterwards, you know? I mean, I want to make sure it gets gone. I don't want anyone saving that, you know.
Well, apparently, the book says that it's considered medical waste. So I don't know. I'm going to have to ask him the next time I go. I'm going to be that type of nosy and be like, what do we do with this spit when it's gone?
It's so gross. Yeah, I don't know how you read the things that you read, because I think I kind of have a strong stomach, but I don't think it's that strong. I really don't. I mean, yeah.
Some of them really get to me. Things about
spit and teeth really do kind of make me shiver. I don't like teeth. I think that's just gross. So I was like, oh, come on, Kevin, like right out the gate. And it gets really grosser from there. He calls the shots that he like makes a special name. So the first one I think was, it was like Bloody Mary something. And then there was one where he calls it lemonade, but it's really not lemonade.
Oh, God.
So,
oh, wow. So what would you give this book out of 5 stars?
Oh, no, it's definitely a 5-star. I love Kevin's work.
Wow.
He writes some very, very intriguing things. I would like to pick his brain a bit just to see where he gets some of his ideas. But this one was really good, and it's very short. I was able to finish it in a day. So it's a good quick read if you wanted to read something short.
Yeah. I'm going to have to try to see if I can get him on the show just to be like, why? But, you know. So.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
I love Kevin. I think he does a great job.
I think Kevin and I will get him famously, actually. We could swap grossness.
Oh, God.
You know, I had a gross moment this evening. I'm going to share it with my listeners because I think I should. I have a terrible habit of I pick the dead skin off my foot when I'm sat watching TV, which is probably why I don't have a girlfriend. And I back in the box home tonight, and I finished my milkshake, so I'm putting these dead bits of skin in my empty milkshake thing. And then,
oh, God, this is so
weird. You know what's coming, don't you? So I'm there watching Family Guy. Grab the milkshake cup, thinking it was a pop, and took a slurp of it. And I want it in my mouth. Are there bits of strawberry, perhaps, from my strawberry? But no, bits of dead foot skin that I'd slurped up my straw. So. There's a cocktail.
Oh,
there's a cocktail for you, but true story. But, anyway, on that note, thank you for joining us, Samantha. Everyone have a great Crimbo, and we will see you in the new year when we get back.
I think we need one.
We'll see you in the new year. Have a jolly one. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. There you go. I could outgrow anybody pretty much.
Gross.
So I think she's still in the green. We need to have Catherine back.
Hello. You guys are so fun. I love listening to you guys back and forth.
That was so gross.
Friday, that was a truth. That happened this very evening. So there you go. Moving on.
Maybe we should have a show sometime, try to gross each other out. Because I'm not going to tell them, but I have some gross stories. So, you know, maybe someday we should do that.
That would be terrific. Yes, we should. Oh, yeah.
So I had a question for Catherine. You know, how often, like, you know, do you experience things every day? Like, do you have spirits that, come bother you? Or, you know, I don't know if bother is the right word to say, but I mean, I just pictured it as being very chaotic, you know? So how do you deal with that on a day-to-day basis?
You know, it took me a long time to figure out how to balance it. But, yeah, it's every day and it's everywhere. So even if I go into a resale shop, I can see things that have happened on that piece of furniture. You know, or I can see things that or the deceased person will come up to me and say, oh, this used to belong to me. Take it home with you. It worked great. Or it would look great in your place. Or I have two other pieces in the back that they haven't brought to the sales floor yet. You should get them to go with it. So, yeah. So, I mean, I have really positive experiences. And then, you know, I do see a lot of spirits on freeways that have been killed in car accidents that don't even know that they died. So, you know, between my house and James's house, there's a freeway. And it's one of the top freeways in the U.S. with the most automobile accidents. It's a very dangerous freeway. And so there's been, you know, carloads of people that have been killed at once. And I've done a lot of clearing with souls on that stretch of freeway. And I still find, you know, I can be out shopping and there'll be a soul there that does not know that they've passed. And that I'll, you know, call in the angels and ask them to open a portal to help them cross. And a lot of times they don't even know who I am, what I'm doing there, what's happened. You know, they're seeing their home and their surroundings just like it was when they passed. So it looks completely different to them than it does in reality now.
Now, being that you've, you know, had these experiences for I imagine, your whole life, does anything ever surprise you anymore? Does anything ever scare you?
The deceased don't scare me, but what I've seen in the living, in their energy field, some of that really does scare me, because I'll see different weapons that they died with in previous lives that are still enlodged in their energy field. So if it's someone that's complaining about chest pains, but there's really nothing wrong with their heart, they've been to the doctor. I do a lot of medical readings for doctors and people in the medical industry. So sometimes it may be me scanning their body, and once I see, okay, this is what's going on, they're still carrying hurt from an injury that's happened in another lifetime. Sometimes it can be as simple as that without it being something, a worst-case scenario. So once we go through, and usually I'll walk them through a regression, which they remember. They see it, and I see it at the same time. We're able to clear what exactly happened to them. And often at times, people that they're connected to in this life had something to do with their passing or the reason why they're holding on to that weapon or that energy from that other lifetime. And once that's clear, usually that person will move out of their lifetime. I mean, usually move out of their life. So it could be, you know, a husband or a boyfriend or a girlfriend. And once it's cleared, it's like, you know what? What are we doing with each other? Let's just move on. And, you know, they completely part ways and it's all good. It's like everything's balanced. But I like, I like being able to see positive changes once people realize they have this aha moment. And sometimes they don't even realize they're doing it, and they walk themselves through it and go, oh, my gosh, I get it now. I totally get it, why I'm doing this.
Wow.
So those are the good things that I like. You know, I like the medical aspect of it, of being able to help people in that way. But I also like being able to help them in the spiritual way of recognizing their worth and changing the patterns of what they've done in other lifetimes and elevating up.
Now, in, you know, again, day-to-day life, if you are, you know, having a conversation with someone, like, you know, kind of like we're talking now, and something comes to you or you see something or you just know something, do you say anything or do you keep it to yourself? Or how, you know, that must be a weird thing to navigate.
You know, it depends on what it is. Sometimes it's something that it's not worth me bringing up because it's not going to change the outcome. And I used, you know, when I was younger, I would run around just trying to fix everything, exhausting myself, thinking, told them, this is going to help them. This is going to change things. And the only thing it did was make me look crazy to them. And then it would happen. You know, they'd contact me and go, how did you know that was going to happen? You know, and so, I would be like, well, this, you know, I just knew it because of this. But, you know, there's times that I'll see something in someone's energy field, and it will be, or on their person. So recently I had a lady contact me, and she actually gave me permission for this because part of this is in another book that I have coming up. But she is dating a guy, and he refused to see her during the week. He would only see her on the weekend. And she thought, my God, our relationship should have grown. At least come over for dinner. She didn't have any reason. He didn't give her any reason. He just said, well, he works during the day and he's tired. He's a post office postman. You know, he would deliver the mail. Well, the reason why he wouldn't see her during the week is he would wear this contraption on his penis during the week, like Monday through Friday. And it was like he either wore it to try to elongate it or something like that, but he refused to take it off, and he didn't want her to know he was wearing it. So he refused to see her during Monday through Friday. So I told her about this. I said, look, this is what's going on. I'm seeing this plastic thing on his penis, and he's wearing it during the week. And she said, you know what? I remember when I was there on the weekend, I saw some paperwork on something like that. So I know you're right. I said, he wears it, and he refuses to take it off during the week. And sure enough, I mean, she eventually talked to him about it, and, like, they worked through it to where she was like, I have this understanding. This is something you feel like you need to do, but, you know, don't shy away from seeing me during the week. So it's like little things like that that will come up that you don't know on the surface. You're just thinking, why is this guy not wanting to see me during the week? I offered to make dinner for him and everything else. So usually, like, things like that improve, but then you get situations where people will say, you know, I know he's not happy with his life. I don't get to hear from him during the week. He tells me he's depressed. Sometimes 2 weeks will go by, and really this guy is, like, living the life of a playboy. He's, like, dating by the numbers every night. He's got a different date. And this girl is really believing this guy that he's down or depressed and he needs time away. Yeah. He's really just trying to find the right one on, you know, one of the hookup sites, you know, of where he's trying to meet people. So sometimes it's very interesting to see what the real story is behind it.
Wow. Yeah, I guess that kind of makes you very suspicious of people when you you meet them, because you know if they're, you know, a bullshitter or not. And, you know, I think that there's so many times that the people that we come in contact with are not who they really are. You know, I mean, they put up a mask, and I think a lot of us would be surprised to find out what, you know, what they're thinking and what they're about. And I don't know if that's a big thing to deal with. So I have to say that I'm glad I don't have any of these powers, because I don't think I could take it. So, wow. And that's a question I wanted to know as well. You know, when you were younger, how did you not think you were just, you know, you're just crazy? Like, I mean, did you know, your parents understand what was going on, or?
No, they didn't. My dad, you know, when I started speaking about things that I would see, it really freaked my mom out. So there was one time period where she locked herself in a room for 3 days. She didn't come out. I guess she came out after we were asleep or whatever, but she was quite frightened. And my father would, you know, tell me, well, back in the olden days, they used to burn witches at the stake, or they burn people at the stake that they thought knew something, or they were killed or whatever. And he'd say, you have to be very careful with that, because people don't understand where it's coming from. You know, so he would tell me things like that would really frighten me. And so, you know, I didn't like to say a lot of things unless I knew it was something of an emergency. Like, I knew if a family member was going to pass, and I would say, Mom, we've got to go, you know, visit so-and-so. She's about to go or whatever. But I was shunned from the family, and basically kind of found my own way at 15.
I hate to do this. It seems like every time we have you on, we run out of time. And I think that the next time we'll have to do an hour and a half. And that's just, we're just going to have to, because we have so much fun with you and it's so enlightening. And I just never want to stop talking to you. But it is at the end of our show now. So give us let us know where we can find you online.
I'm at Psychic Catherine Branham on Instagram, and Psychic Catherine Branham on Facebook, or Catherine Branham on Facebook, and Psychic KB on Twitter. I'm also on YouTube under Catherine Branham, and our workbook series, Self-Help Flood, about releasing other people's energy from your energy field, is available. All books are available on Amazon, and our clothing line, Self-Help Flood t-shirts, on sale right now for Christmas for $10. So if you're looking for last-minute Christmas gifts and you've got Amazon free shipping, go get your shirts. I know James has a few of them.
yes, I do. They are wonderful.
Yes, you do. And I've got one for your little sweetie too. I've got some black ones, black hoodies coming out. They're
oh,
really cool.
Nice.
Thank you so much,
Catherine.
Thank you.
We've had such a great time. I can't wait to have you back. And for all of our listeners out there, go out and buy Nobody Knew It Was Murder by Catherine Branham. And thank you so much.
Murder.
I can't wait to have you back. It was murder.
I love you guys. Lots of kisses.
We love
you.
See you soon. Okay. Bye-bye. Well, we need time with Carol because she's always so many fascinating stories. I just want to talk about it. Buy the book and read them. I know she's working on a sequel with the Bonnell story, so looking forward to that one too. Well, on that note, it's time to say Merry Christmas, Xtina, and good night.
Good night, Xtina. And Merry Christmas.
No, you didn't say Merry Christmas. Let's do that again. Merry Christmas and good night.
Okay. Merry Christmas and good night.
Good night.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. Decorations of red on a green Christmas tree won't be the same, dear, if you're not here with me. And when those blue snowflakes start falling, but I have a blue